the OTB Podcast Network.
They spoke about your arm not being down beside your side. I mean, this is not Irish dancing.
OTB Sports Radio.
Basketball would have been my main game.
The brand new sports radio station from Off the Ball.
That's my point. Don't play for us if you're a proud Englishman.
Now broadcasting 24 hours a day, live on the Go Loud app, Alexa.
You have a whole new world of possibilities.
Google Home, TuneIn, and offtheball.com/radio.
This is OTB Sports Radio. The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Well, you're very welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock this afternoon. 53106, the number for your text messages. We're streaming live as well now, so you can get in touch with us on the Off the Ball social channels on YouTube, on Facebook, and at Off the Ball on Twitter. You can also listen on the Go Loud app. And now, the Grand National was meant to be happening today in Liverpool at Aintree, that famous race at 5 o'clock today. Tiger Roll, the Irish horse, bidding for a third win in a row in the race. It's off, of course, because of the coronavirus pandemic. There is a virtual race on ITV at 5:15. With proceeds from bookmaker bets going to the NHS, to charity. The maximum you can spend is a tenner on that across the water. So that's what they're doing on ITV instead of having the race. So instead of previewing the race as we normally would do today, on the Saturday panel, we're going to do something different. We're going to speak to two men who've won the famous race and kind of talk about their memories and talk about how life is like right now. We've got Mick Fitzgerald, a man who grew up in Wexford and then became one of the top jumps jockeys in the UK, winning the Grand National on Rough Quest in 1996. And the Cork trainer, Jimmy Mann, who trained Monty's Pass to win the Grand National back in 2003. He's down in Connor there, training there. And Mick and Jimmy, good afternoon. You're very welcome to the show.
Afternoon, John.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Jimmy.
Good afternoon, mate.
The wonders of modern technology, lads. First of all, Mick, you're in England. It's pretty serious over there. It's very serious here. What's life like there at the moment? Is it in lockdown, pretty much the same as here?
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, even just listening to the adverts, it's ringing home. You know, we have a responsibility. We've got a responsibility to the older people, I think, as well, because we might be able to fend this virus off, but somebody who's a little bit older, who has an underlying health issue, they won't be able to. So it's in the interests of everybody that we maintain social distancing and we just obey the rules, really.
Jimmy, have you had to let stable staff go or just close down everything there in Cork?
Yeah, on the horses, most of them have gone home, and we're just breaking a few horses, keeping the lads busy for the moment, but it's not looking good, you know.
Yeah, and Mick, a lot of staff, we saw the Jockey Club report that a lot of staff are going on furlough as well, and it's just a case of everything has to close down in the interest of public health, as you said there.
Yeah, it has, and the biggest worry about all of this is the uncertainty of when it's going to resume. I think that's what everybody is finding difficult. If it's like everything, if you know in 3 weeks' time we're going to start back racing behind closed doors, then people can plan for it. But with the uncertainty around this virus and being able to contain it, nobody knows when we're going to come back. And that makes life very difficult for everybody involved in horse racing because, you know, the horses still have to be exercised, they have to be looked after, they have to be fed, and somebody has to do that. And it's, you know, it can become quite difficult at times when, you know, staff are having to be laid off. You know, it's really tough for anybody involved in that industry at the moment.
Yeah, you just can't, Jimmy, just wind them down and put them in the field. The grass has to be right and they have to just be wound down to the point where you can just put them out. Is that the case?
Well, that's true. With the past week now, we've had the hand shoes off them and just putting them on the walker and out in the paddock every day and in every night. And hopefully if the weather picks up a bit, the nights are a bit cold at the minute, but shortly they should be going out permanently, you know.
Mick, how are you keeping yourself occupied and fit?
I'm mucking out, actually, a little bit. My wife has a few horses here. The kids have a few ponies. And like I said, they've still got to be looked after. We've got a couple of the race horses as well. I've got a racing club. Both of those horses have come out of training now. So we're just looking after them. They're going out during the day, in at night time. As Jimmy said, it's just there's not enough grass out there at the moment for horses and it's too cold. You've got a horse that's been pampered and looked after. These horses are unbelievably well looked after. If you just turn your back on them, they suffer. So you've got to be very careful about when you turn them out. It's got to be a bit warmer than it is at the moment. So there's still plenty to do, but it's very different to what I'm used to. You know, I love my job. I love the sport that I'm involved in. And, you know, it does feel difficult. But the one thing you've got to keep yourself sane with is that by doing this, we're all saving people's lives.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Mick. I go to Cheltenham every year, and it was obviously very difficult to be working there this year. And I haven't left the house or like the near regions of my house for 3 weeks. And this is the first day I'm back as an essential worker in the studio in Dublin. And when I came into Dublin, it's deserted. And that's great to see because everybody's following the guidelines here. In England, what's the situation there, like on the streets, in the neighbourhoods, in the areas? Are people doing what they're being told to do by the UK government?
Yeah, well, certainly around here they are, because, you know, I think people realise the magnitude. I think a couple of weeks ago, people weren't as convinced, but I think anybody who watches the news doesn't need convincing anymore. You know, this is serious and we've got to obey the guidelines. Otherwise, it's going to carry on for an awful lot longer than any of us wanted to. So, you know, I think we've just got to do the right thing. And it's amazing if you have to go out to get shopping or anything, it's amazing how quiet the roads are. I think an awful lot of people are trying to do the right thing.
Great to hear, Mick Fitzgerald. There's a text in here on 53106 interviewing Mangan. Both masters of their craft. Monty's Pass, a great horse, brilliant around Aintree in the Grand National. At the Topham Trophy and the Fox Hunters. The day after the gamble won the National, Monty's Pass paraded at the Curra. What an amazing temperament. Brilliant. That is from Sean in Wexford. Thanks for your text, Sean. 53106. We're going to play the moment that was your best moment of your career now. Mick, from 24 years ago, Rough Quest winning the National.
That is all. Rough Quest comes up to the line to win it. Rough Quest is the winner. Encore on par in second. It's going to be very close for third. And at the line is a photo with Sapiti Lili possibly just getting up to be...
Well, Mick, normally you would be in Liverpool today at the Grand National working there. I'd say that still puts a shiver down your spine, though, listening to that commentary from the late Peter Sullivan on Rough Quest 1996.
Yeah, it never gets old because... it doesn't matter how much time passes. They can never take it away from you. And you're forever known as a Grand National winning jockey. It's the one race, you know, that almost transcends the sports. Because if you meet somebody who knows absolutely nothing about horse racing and they say, oh, what do you do? And you say, well, I used to be a jockey and I work on... oh, yeah, did you ever win the National? That's the first question they ask. They don't ask you, did you win the Derby or did you win the Guineas or did you win the Gold Cup? They always ask you, did you win the National? And it's quite nice, you know, to be able to turn around and say, well, actually, I did. So it's, look, that was a magic day. And I was reminiscing about it actually earlier on this week. I was chatting to my dad last night and 24 years ago, I spent a very restless night with him in a hotel where he snored the whole night long. I thought it'd be quite nice to have a bit of family bonding and share a twin room with my dad. And he'd had a few drinks and actually snored all night. And I spent most of the night getting up and down out of my bed trying to move him and stop him snoring. So I actually didn't get much sleep, but he had a very good night's sleep.
And the year before, Mick, you fed at the first in the National, and this was your second ride. Were you nervous on the day? Because when I watched the race back, it was easy.
Yeah, it was. It's funny, you know, I don't know whether it's the naivety of youth or what it is, but do you know what? I was convinced Arse would win. I think my job was very simple. I had to keep him clear of dangers. Don't be going brave man's route down the inner, go middle outer. I was on the best horse. I knew that. My job really then was to not hit the front until after the elbow. And luckily for me, that's exactly how it panned out. It's funny, you know, you've got, I think we had, there's 30 fences. I knew after the third that he was going to win. It was as simple as that, because he was so sure-footed. And I'm sure Jimmy will tell you, you know, when you've got a horse that is taken to the fences as they were then, it is magical. There is, honestly, there is no feeling quite like riding a horse that is jumping those fences as well, because it's nothing you experience on a daily basis. It's very different, and it is the biggest buzz you'll ever experience. It's just magic.
Can you remind, it is a family show, but can you remind listeners what you told Des Lynham live in the BBC?
Well, you know, look, I kind of have to explain a little bit why I said what I said.
What did you say?
There was a steward's inquiry immediately after the race, and I thought I was going to become the first ever jockey to win the National and then lose it in the steward's room. So we had quite a long wait before the winner was actually announced. So then I got shipped out to meet Des Lynham. And for anybody, like, Des Lynham, as far as I was concerned, was like a half-brother to God. You know, he was Mr. Saturday TV. And being introduced to him, I got a bit carried away. And he said, Mick Fitzgerald, you've just won the Grand National. How does that feel? And I said, Des, after that, even sex is an anticlimax. Little did I know.
Did you expect a reaction? I'm sure there was an, like, I say, your phone was hopping.
Well, yeah, it was. I don't, like, obviously now I work in television and you've got somebody in your ear all the time telling you, you know, and I could just see Des's eyes flicker when I said it. And somebody must have went to him, holy bleep, did he really just say that?
Because your book was called Better Than Sex, Mick.
It was. And
just before we get to Monty's past, Jimmy, Mick, it's funny how, like, the what sport can give and what they can take away. A year later, you're meant to be riding the favourite Go Ballistic in the Grand National, and then there's a bomb scare. Tell us about what happened that day, the day of the bomb scare.
Well, it was a funny one, actually, because the race before the National was the Martell Hurdle, which is a big grade one, and I won it on a horse called Bimsy for Aidan Ryan and Red Jacobs. And I was on a high, so I had to get changed into the colours of Go Ballistic, then went and weighed out. And as soon as I weighed out, I came back in. I was having a drink because I was sweating to do light on him. And I was having a drink and somebody said to me, you've got to go. And I went, how do you mean you've got to go? It was like, it's 15 minutes before the race. And they said, no, you've got to go. And I went, how do you mean I've got to go? They said, you've got to leave now. Grab your coat. And that was it. We had nothing else. Like, I had my breeches and boots and the colours of Go Ballistic on me. That was it. And my jacket. And we were gone. We had to leave.
So what happened then?
Well, then we had to try and find somewhere to go. We ended up going down the road and there was a house which had a lot of people in it. And at this stage, remember, my dad had come with me the year before and I thought he was a good luck charm then. So he came again the following year and I used to drop him off in the morning and then he'd come to the weighing room and I'd be finished at the end of the day. Well, like, there was, I don't know how many thousand people there that day. I was wondering how I was going to find my dad. And I went to this lady's house in the middle of, just down the road from the race course. And there he was serving tea. And like, it was surreal. Like, there was all these people in there who were all just punters and jockeys, trainers, few owners, all just having tea in this woman called Edie Roach's house. It was just like, it was an amazing day. And it was almost like surreal. You didn't really know what was happening. It all felt very strange.
Where did you sleep that night? Did you already have digs or, you know, were you meant to go back?
No, we had no digs because the plan is always to finish riding, go home. I ended up getting a room in the Adelphi. And we actually had a party that night in the Adelphi. And there was lads going around dressed as jockeys who were actually jockeys. They weren't dressed as jockeys. They were jockeys still in their gear.
This is the nightclub. This is gas stuff. Jimmy, were you at the Grand National as a punter or as a trainer or as just a fan before Monty's Pass won it?
No, I hadn't been there before the National, really. I was there the year before. He was second in the Tottenham, but I didn't wait for the National that day.
Yeah, well, let's listen back to Monty's Pass. Easy win in 2003 under Barry Geraghty.
They're on the run to the elbow. Monty's Pass by 5 or 6 lengths for Ireland. In second is Amberley House, a long gap, then Supreme Glory, who's running on well, but Monty's Pass, Barry Geraghty steals a peep over his shoulder. He
He's nicely clear. He's six, seven, eight lengths in front of Amberley House. Supreme Glory running on for second. But it's a victory for Ireland at Barry Geraghty as Monty's Pass comes down to win the Martel Cognac Grand National. Monty's Pass the winner.
We were speaking just about how brilliant it is with Mick there to win the Grand National. Jimmy, on the morning of the race, how were you feeling? Were you quietly confident? Were you thinking this horse is a really good jumper, and if he stays the trip, he might win this?
Yeah, I was very confident, really. The only worry I had, as Mick say, you know, for fear you'd be brought down, you know, a horse fall in front of you. But the going was absolutely, he loved the firm ground. He had won the Kerry National in September on firm ground, and the key was, once the ground was firm, they'd done a bit of watering, but the sun came out and it dried up whatever water they had put on, and it gave him a real, real good chance, you know.
And this horse won the Kerry National at Listowel the winter before. He won at Aintree, and Barry got a great tune out of him. I watched the race there the other day, and he was a very easy winner, jumped beautifully. And your wife, Mary, was a big part of training Monty's Pass.
Oh, she was, yeah. Look, it's all teamwork here, you know. The whole family, we all work together, and, you know, It was a, you know, to have a horse like him, you know, usually we are mostly a selling yard. We point to point the horses, and Monty, we point to point at Monty's Pass. He won his maiden down in Tallow, down here on my own land, the West Waterford Hunt, run the point to point down there. And that evening, Henrietta and I came up to know would he be for sale, and I said, yeah, he would definitely be for sale, you know. And the only thing Henrietta said, you can vet him for anything you like, bar one thing. I said, you can vet him for his heart, because he won't pass, he has an irregular heartbeat. And she said, you can put him back in, so he's no good to me unless he's 100% sound, you know. And luckily enough, he went on and won a few more pound of pints and a couple of hunter's chases. And next thing, the phone rang one night, and lads from Belfast, the D-Racing Syndicate, headed by Mike Futter, and to know he'd be for sale. And I said, yeah, he's for sale. And again, I said to him, look, I said, not to be wasting your time now, he will not pass for his heart. Or they said, we're not worried about his heart. If you say he's sound, he said, that'll do me. Well, so he is the soundest horse I ever had in the yard. And they said, that's fine, we'll buy him so. And I said, who'll be training him? Or they said, don't you want to train him? I said, I'll train him if you want me to train him. And next thing they said, you train him. And well, the rest is history, really, you know.
It's beyond your wildest dreams, Jimmy. You're a small trainer from Connah. You're involved in the breeding of horses. And there you are with a horse with a great chance in the Grand National that goes and wins the Grand National easily. I saw Mouse Morris there a couple of years ago and Rule the World won. Just the emotion that was within Mouse, because you're waiting for so long to train it. On the day, were you very calm or were you just going mad in the stands?
Well, I would you believe it? I watched it in the big screen inside in the parade ring, actually. It was the old parade ring. And yeah, like as Mick said, he was a great jumper, and I was very confident of him jumping. And with a round to go, full round of entry to go, he was absolutely tanking tanking away in Barry Geraghty's hands. And I said, gee, say, with any better luck, if this horse stays standing, you know, if any loose horse don't upset him, he will win, you know. And sure enough, he did, you know.
And Mike Futter made an awful lot of money out of it, the owner.
Well, you see, Mike was a great gambler, and you know, before the weights came out for the National, everybody would be punting on the weights before, because if a horse comes out and he has very light weight, the bookies would automatically shorten his price. But Mike had backed him at 66 to 1 and 50 to 1 and 40 to 1 and 33, so by all accounts, and he won over a million sterling on him, which was, you know, brilliant. Whoa. Really. But the anti-post betting is fine, but the key to the horse was the firm ground, you know.
Did you have a euro each way on yourself, Jimmy?
I had a little each way in myself. I'm not a gambler myself, but I think I had a tenner each way in myself.
Oh, that's great stuff. It is such a great race. It does capture the nation, Mick, doesn't it, in England and Ireland. And like I know myself, even when I grew up West Tip in 1986, the first winner I remember, and I remember back in the five run Lord Galen in 97, and it does capture the imagination. And it is something, as you said at the start there, you can't take off your CV. And we saw when Tony McCoy won it, how it meant so much to him on Don't Push It.
Yeah, but it was amazing. I was with AP the night before he won in 2010. And he, the way AP is, like he's a winner. And it was really annoying him, the fact that he hadn't won the national. And so many other lads had, like people like me had won the national. I used to always wind them up. You might have, you know, 14 champion jockey titles, but you've never won the national. So that used to really annoy him. And his outpouring of emotion, I think, when Don't Push It won, I think showed what it meant to him personally as well. You know, because it is the greatest steeplechase in the world. It is the one that everybody wants to win. And it's the one that everybody knows. Like I said, the man on the street who will always have his pound or do be involved in an office sweepstake might never be a punter, but we'll always have heard of the national because of the sweepstake elements and that luck element as well. And I think, you know, listening to Jimmy talking about Monty's pass, it was quite, I think Jimmy is underplaying his part in it. He did a brilliant job with Monty's pass, because Barry Garrity that year had won at Cheltenham on a horse called You'll Never Walk Alone. And that was obviously owned by JP McManus, and Christy Roach trained him. And he was, again, a horse that was really strongly fancied for the Grand National. But I can remember Barry had the choice, and there was no doubt in his mind which horse was going to be the one to ride in the National. Like, bearing in mind that You'll Never Walk Alone at one of the Cheltenham Festival, Barry was in no doubt which horse he was going to ride. And I think Jimmy should take an awful lot of credit for that, because he'd obviously prepared him absolutely perfect. So, Jimmy, you should be very proud of yourself.
Well, this is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Mick Fitzgerald and Jimmy Mangan. We'll be back after the break, lads, to speak more about the Grand National memories. The race is meant to be happening today. You must have questions for our panel. Mick Fitzgerald, legendary jockey. Jimmy Mangan, great trainer. Have you ever attended the Grand National? Any good yarns? Have you ever backed the winner? We'll be back for more great conversation after the news. 53106 for your text messages. I think the Grand National should be held at the Aintree November meeting instead of the Beecher Chase, which is also over the Grand National fences and is 3 miles and 3 furlongs. Great show, lads. That is Declan McMahon. So back after the news, the Saturday panel, Mick Fitzgerald and Jimmy Mangan, won't be long. And this is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk until 5 o'clock. John Duggan with you this afternoon. It is a Saturday panel, and we're streaming live as well. You can text us on 53106. You can also view us if you're not listening to the radio on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook. At Off the Ball on Twitter is our Twitter handle. Part two of our Saturday panel on Skype today, with social distancing, we're talking to two legends of horse racing that have won the Grand National. The Grand National was supposed to be happening today in Liverpool at Aintree at 5 o'clock. But Mick Fitzgerald, who rode Rough Quest in 1996 to win the famous race, and Jimmy Mangan, who trained Monty's Pass in 2003 to win the race, have joined us on the line. A lot of great reaction here on the tweets and texts, folks. Hi, John. This is from Dave Keena. A great chat about the Nationals. Jimmy Mangan's cousin Aileen Sloane Lee and her husband Andrew Lee trained a winner on National Day in 2003, just a couple of hours before Monty's Pass won with Risky Reef, ridden by Ruby Walsh. Were you aware of that at the time, Jimmy, or was your head completely in Monty's Pass?
No, I was well aware of it. I was
a good man. And you got a good one, I think, called Castlebrook at the moment, Jimmy, that good horse that in the Potts colours. When you've got a Monty's Pass or a Connor Castler or a Winstone Boy, how do you know when you've got a good one, a really good horse that could do something?
Well, it was, I always say a lucky horse is better than a good horse sometimes, but unfortunately Castlebrook is on the injury list at the minute, but hopefully he's recovering well. Look, the gallops will tell you, and of course when you're running the odd pint of pints and things, the cream will come to the top, you know.
And Jane, she was a very good rider, and she'd an unlucky break, I remember, at Cheltenham, but she's got into broadcasting now and doing great.
Yeah, I never thought she'd end up doing that. You know, look, we were down in the dumps over in Cheltenham. I'll never forget coming down off the stand when she got unseated halfway up the straight, when victory was nearly, you know, in her grasp. And I remember going out onto the course, out to her, and look, naturally she was upset. And I said, look, Jane, we'll get over this, we'll be back. We'll think of John Thomas McNamara, who had a bad injury the day before, and say we'll think of him. You're fine, and that's the main thing, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice words, Jimmy. That was Oscar Delta that Jane had that mishap on at Cheltenham. And I suppose, Mick, what Jimmy's saying there and speaking about John Thomas, racing it can give and it can take away, and it can be a sport that gives you great moments, but also it's a sport that is very dangerous. And, you know, you're risking life and limb, and there's an ambulance following you on the course, and it's a sport that's had its share of tragedies, very sadly. You in 2008, Mick, you were riding Lamy in the Grand National, and I suppose you never would have thought that this was going to be your last riding a horse.
No, you wouldn't. But, you know, it's a bit like what Jimmy has just said. I can remember, you know, everything about that day. I actually thought the horse had a good chance. He'd been round the previous year when AAP had ridden him. Jumped the first really well, went to the second, and just met it on a nice stride. And for whatever reason, like, he was a brilliant jumper. For whatever reason, he just had a blank. And he did nothing. And he literally headbutted the fence. And I can remember that, like, in those days, there was a lot of timber frame on the bottom. And I can remember him hitting that and knowing then, this is going to hurt. And you're almost getting yourself ready to get into a ball so that when you land, but it's like somebody presses the ejector button, you're gone. And I woke up on the ground and I couldn't feel anything. Like, I was lying there, and like, I was the sort of fella that I wasn't afraid of man or beast. And there was nothing I was afraid of. But in that moment, I was scared because I couldn't feel my legs, couldn't feel my arms. And all I thought about then was my two kids. I've got two little boys at the time. They were both very young. And I just thought of them. And it was amazing how everything else seemed to fade away. You know, that was all that mattered to me in that moment. And luckily for me, I had damaged my spinal cord, but only, you know, it had only had a severe bang, and I'd broken C3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, and which caused a temporary paralysis. And it took me quite a long time to get over it. But I was thankful that I was able to walk. You know, there's an awful lot of people who are a lot worse off than I am. And yes, okay, it meant that I was never able to ride again, but I'm able to walk around. I mean, like, my kids are older now. My eldest boy is 13. My other son Oscar is 12. I've got a little girl Lola who's 10, you know, and I'm able to enjoy my life with them. So, you know, I count myself very lucky to have had a career that I loved every single minute of it. And if somebody said to me I could do it all again, I'd love to. Because when you do something that you love, it makes it easy. You know, I'm a golfer now, and I have lessons, and I think about getting better, and I think about doing this, and I think about doing that. I didn't have to think about that when I was riding. It was easy. So, you know, when you do something that you love and you get paid for it, it's not hard work.
I think we're seeing with medical staff in Ireland and England at the moment how amazing a job they're doing on the front line. And I'd say that day, the medical staff, I just know at Aintree were great for you, I'd say.
Well, yeah, I think very often we underestimate the part that people in the NHS over here, the people who work in the health service in Ireland, you know, what an important role those people play. We all think we're important in our own little way. We're not important. Those people are, because they can make the difference between you being alive or dead. And I think that can never be underestimated.
Were there many psychological scars? Did you have a few dark days after that, Mick?
I had a lot. I don't mind admitting it. You know, I was, the following year, I lost a lot of weight. I was getting a lot of fevers, and I thought, you know, things weren't quite as they should be. And I kept going to the hospital. They kept saying there was nothing wrong with me. And in the end, they found out that I had MRSA. Which nearly killed me. So, you know, I had a hole in my esophagus, which took 7 operations to fix. And like, what's going to win the next race pales into significance to when you think, am I going to be able, like I was on Nil by Mouth for 4 months. I was being fed through a tube in my stomach overnight. I had to have intravenous injections every day for 9 months, you know, so it wasn't easy. But do you know what? I got through it. And a lot of that is down to my family. You know, never underestimate the power of the people around you. And I think that's very much the case with me. And, you know, I had dark days, but very often it was a case of, you know, I needed to be strong for them because they were strong for me when I needed them most.
Yeah, very well said, Mick. Very well said. Just on 53106 here, a few texts. I travelled to Aintree from Dublin for Grand National with a group of friends. None of us bar one have much knowledge about racing. Jimmy Mangan is my first cousin. We met the horse before the race and put holy water on him. Thanks to Jimmy and Mary for a wonderful and most memorable day. That's from Catherine Fagan. John, great to hear Mick and Jimmy recording their great national victories. Two great ambassadors rooted in National Hunt. Hopefully it won't be long before we're looking forward to racing, returning. That's from Owen in Lucan. I think Jimmy... Mick has put the nail on the head there about having a support network and having people around you to support you through the ups and downs in life.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Like you couldn't speak well enough of the health system, the ambulance people and everything. Because I remember once ever I was removed from a point to point to the regional hospital in Cork up to casualty, and. I remember about waiting that night and people coming in after drinking all day or on drugs and the abuse some of them nurses and doctors were getting. I said, Jesus, do they have to put up with that, you know? And they, you know, trying to do their level best for people, you know, they're absolutely incredible people, really, you know?
Mick, for those of us that are watching the broadcast here on YouTube or on Twitter or on Facebook, you've got a few pictures behind the wall of your career. Do you might want to go through a few of them there?
This is a horse called Caterino, who I won the Triumph on. I also won the champion four-year-old hurdle on him at Punchestown. He was a very good horse. He actually won twice over the national fences as well for Sam Whaley-Cohen. I rode him in the National, got unseated on him at the chair, fell off him, really. This is one of my favourites, a horse called Fonmart. I won a Ryanair on him. He was a very, very good horse. One of the best jumpers I ever rode. And one of the most criminal things that ever happened was he was rated too highly to run in the Topham. Had he have been able to run in the Topham, he would have won. There's no doubt about it, even carrying top weight because he was such a good jumper. This is something that was presented to me when I won the National in 96. That's a montage of my wins. That was the Racing Post cover that I did. I'll give you a little very short tour.
Oh, this is great, Nick. This is great stuff.
That's me winning on a horse called Marlborough at the Cheltenham Festival.
2000, yeah.
We've got Ray Milette, who was the first very good horse that I rode. Lloyd Webber's owned him. I won on him at Cheltenham, won the Cathcart. A horse called Sharpigal won the Tall Gold Trophy on him. There's my two boys when they were very young. And, well, I suppose life wouldn't be complete without a golf picture, really. Got a little picture here of me.
Oh, it's Tiger Woods. Fella.
You might have heard of him, yeah.
What was he like? Was he sound?
Very good. Not a bad player either, you know.
Yeah, half decent.
There's a couple of lads you might know as well. Then the BMW with AP and Brian O'Driscoll and Padraig Harrington.
Our own Brian O'Driscoll, yeah.
Yeah, great. You know, what a player he is, you know. He's almost wasted on the telly. That man should be a golfer.
Yeah, he held a putt there against Tiger Woods there recently a few months ago. I think it was even better than his rugby career. That's an amazing... tour you've given us there, Mick. And also, I personally want to thank you, Mick, because my dad is 18 years gone. And just to personally just say something for a moment. In 1999, we had a VHS tape recorder. And I'm a big racing head. And I was in college and I taped the Gold Cup. And I had 5 each way and Seymour Business at 14-1. And I came home about an hour after the race, didn't know the result. Put it in, jumped every fence. Jumped the last when you jumped the last alongside Go Ballistic, the horse you rode in that Grand National 2 years before, and then Seymour Business got up the hill. And I rushed up to the village, and my dad was in the bookie shop, and we had an embrace. It was a great moment. It's funny how technology has changed 20 years later, but Seymour Business was a great horse, Paul Nichols, and my dad was pleased because he backed Sir Talbot to win the county hurdle that day. But that was a great memory as well, like to win a Gold Cup or to win a King George or to win a Champion Chase with Call Equiname, you know, great memories.
I was very lucky. I rode a lot of very good horses. I was stable jockey to Nicky Henderson for 15 years, you know, absolute gentleman to work with. And, you know, we all know how good a trainer he is. I had a lot of good days. I'm very proud of my career. So, you know, every time I take a trip down memory lane, I've got a smile on my face. So I've been very, very lucky and very fortunate to. When I was 13 years of age, I rode my first ever racehorse, and it changed my life forever, because from that moment onwards, I knew what I wanted to do. I'm one of the lucky ones. There's an awful lot of people who go through their life not really knowing what they're going to do. I knew from that minute that was me. And, you know, I feel very blessed that I've been able to do this job for so long.
Jimmy, I remember Jason Titley, who won the 1995 Grand National. He lives in my father's village of Quinn in Clare. And in one of the pubs there, there's all these kind of trophies and everything for Royal Athlete. And Jason, when he won the race, he gave it a great ride. What did they give you when you won the 2003 Grand National? Did you get a case of champagne, or was it Martel, or was it like, did you have all these trophies at home in Cork?
Oh, we have loads of trophies. And Martel gave out big bottles of Martel brandy at the time, you know, but loads of photographs. And look, as you come into the village, you're kind of from both sides. There's a big plaque up that the home of Monty's Pass, Conor, the home of Monty's Pass, it's still up, you know, because he's still alive, you know.
It's great. He's about 27 now.
He's 27 now, and, you know, for a horse with in the regular heartbeat, he's, you know, I think he's the oldest living Grand National winner alive at the minute.
Yeah, we got a text in here as well on 53106. Who is the lad's opinion regarding the best national runners who have ever won the race? Who's your favourite? Apart from your own Monty's Pass, Jimmy, who was the best? Was it Red Rum?
Red Rum, and, you know, Tommy Calvary used to ride a horse called Les Cargo. He was always a great favourite of mine. He was a Gold Cup winning horse, and he was second in the Grand National, and he won the Grand National. He was a hell of a horse, Les Cargo.
Les Cargo won two Gold Cups as well, one in 1975. Yeah. And it took 24 years after Les Cargo won for another Irish winner. Mick, what was your favourite winner that wasn't Rough Quest?
You know, I tell you, one of the races that, if ever, look, there's always an opportunity to watch these races online now. And I took the opportunity to watch Red Rum winning in 73. And I defy you not to cry for Crisp, because I have never seen anything as cruel. Because that horse went round there like he was on springs. And he was just unbelievable. And to see him then get chinned in the shadow of the post by Red Rum, giving him a stone and 9 pound. And then Red Rum obviously went on and won the following year. He was second then twice after, and then won it again in 77. Like, he was a hell of a horse, Chris. And it was just unfortunate for him that he got beat. So I think it's probably wrong of me to say it, but I think Red Rum he's the one. But I think Chris has to go down as probably the unluckiest loser of them all.
And Tigerola has been a horse that has just taken to the national fences. Maybe we'll see him next year.
Yeah, well, I think you've got a hope. But I'd be just interested to get Jimmy's take on a lot of the lads in Ireland, Jimmy. How's it going to affect them? Because obviously a lot of the lads who've had point-to-pointers this year would have been looking to sell them in May. There's going to be no sales now. How are a lot of those lads going to cope?
Oh, it's definitely going to put a lot of pressure on the likes of them pinhookers, you know. You know, horses were only just starting to come out because, well, February had been so wet, and a lot of with hurricanes. Every weekend there seemed to be a hurricane. and you know, races were cancelled. I remember the 9th of February down here in Tallow, we were the only point-to-point that went ahead on that day. There was all racing in England and Ireland was cancelled, and we were the only meeting went ahead. And next thing, you know, the coronavirus comes along, and you know, all the horses had to go out to grass. So it's going to hit them big time, and especially the lads with you know, 2-year-olds now in the breeze ups. It's going to be very, very difficult for these guys, you know.
We have to get through this, guys. We have to be responsible. We have to look out for each other. What will you look forward to most come the day when racing resumes, whether later this year or next year?
Well, as far as listen, the main thing is that when it will start, that this COVID-19 will be gone, and you know, gone and into the history books. But we don't want to hear any more about it. But you know, everybody is doing everything they're being asked to do, and hopefully, it's the only way to get rid of it. And look, we're all, as the fellow says, we're all under one team to get rid of this cursed thing. You know, it's frightening for elderly people, and as you said a while ago, and people that have health issues. It's really, really very worrying times for them, you know.
Yeah, Mick, well said by Jimmy there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Look, we all want to come back racing because that's what we do. It's what, you know, it's what we love doing. It's what we do for a job. But people's lives are at stake here. So I think that's the most important thing. And, you know, let's hope that they find either a vaccine for it or we get rid of it. Because until it's gone, you'll always be looking over your shoulder.
Well, Mick Fitzgerald and Jimmy Mangan, you've been just great company over the last 45 minutes and Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Thanks so much for your time today, and please stay safe.
Take care. See you, Jim.
See you, mate. See you, mate.
Okay, 53106 for your text messages on the chat with Mick Fitzgerald and Jimmy Mangan. They're back with Eddie Brennan, the former Kilkenny star and leash manager, after this.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.